We did a musical for Taco Bell with Doja Cat and Dolly Parton, and we filmed all on iPhone.
No way.
Yes.
What a mashup.
It's like a 10-minute musical shot in New York.
In this episode, working with brands like Apple, Nike, and Gucci, we sit down with Brazilian director, photographer, and cinematographer, Camila Cornelson.
So how long have you been in the States, in LA?
Yeah, I got here in February.
Cool.
I've been like coming and going a little bit from Brazil. I traveled twice already since I got here.
How much of your time is spent just doing cinematography these days? Like, is it a lot of commercials, or is it you leaning more towards narrative stuff these days?
In commercial, it's been very rare because, I mean, it takes a lot of time when you're directing to write treatments and be part of the whole process. And it's funny, I don't know, I've been here for a very short amount of time, but in Brazil, once you start directing, you are competing with like other directors, so they won't hire you as a DP anymore.
I see, yeah.
It's a market thing. It's really hard to keep both. So the last few years I was working as a DP more in narrative projects. I did this two shows for HBO and Disney, and also did a feature film during COVID with a couple of friends, like 12 days indie film.
Yeah.
Because I didn't go to film school, I feel I have a lot to learn with other directors, and narrative is a good place for me and for them as well, because I feel that as a DP that directs, I can bring a lot to the table. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually directors that only do feature films or narrative, they don't film that much, and I'm on set every day. Right. So I think I can bring like practical things that when you're shooting a TV show, like on Disney, we were doing almost 12 pages a day. It's a lot. So how can you speed up that process? Yeah. And cinematography can help on that. Like, how can we rig the lights? How can we move from scene to scene? So
what were some of those things that you, I mean, 12 pages a day is
it's massive.
Intense,
yeah.
To say the least. What were some of the things that you approached that with? Like,
the art department made it so perfect that the set was kind of 360, so camera could move everywhere. And me and the director, we wanted to go with a Steadicam. Mm. So most lights were practicals. We had a few lights that we could hide, but like we did a very good pre-light before starting. And then I remember at some point that we needed to speed it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
So we were blocking the scenes in a way that we didn't need to do like master and a medium and a close up. We were kind of doing in one shot, but we needed to rehearse a little bit more. But I remember that like after the second week, we got a rhythm that was very good. And I was bringing a lot of ideas to the director on how we could manage our time and still have, you know, beautiful images and performance and everything else.
That's always the tough thing with narrative stuff. It's like when you get like halfway through, you're like, man, I'm just getting this rhythm. Yes. And then you're almost done. And you're like, gosh, I wish we could have figured this out beforehand. It's always a struggle.
Yeah, first season is it's always a mess. I think you need the second season to adjust things. Yeah.
You grew up in São Paulo?
No, I grew up in Curitiba. It's okay. It's a city in the south of Brazil, a little bit below São Paulo. I used to go to São Paulo a lot, and I was a bit Brazilian to leave there because São Paulo is so big and it's massive. It's like it has a New York vibe. Mm. But then I started to work on the film industry, and where I live, it's, you know, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I moved to São Paulo in 2012 and I stayed there for 10 years.
Yeah. I think me and you have a very similar upbringing in music. and playing in bands and traveling, I'm sure. What was your sort of transition from music and finding film? Like, what was the story for that?
Well, actually, it's very crazy, the whole thing, because my dad is a still photographer. Mm-hmm. My mom's a producer, and they met in a concert, my mom playing the keyboards. Wow. And they were like very musical, like all in our like home environment, there was always a lot of music. And my mom was a teacher of piano when I was a kid, but we had a car accident and she lost some of the movements. So we sold the piano and I couldn't learn anymore. And I was a bit like frustrated by that. Like I kind of always wanted to be in a band. And I remember that there's this place that I used to hang out with my friends. And I saw them like, let's, you know, form a band, do some music. And I was, can I join, please? And they were like, do you play any instruments? And I said, no. Do you sing? I said, no. What can you do? I said, I don't know. I can dance. I can do whatever you want me to. But it started as a, you know, for me, it was a lot of fun. Like I wanted to be there for fun. And I remember the first rehearsal, I took the microphone and started, you know, making up lyrics and, you know, performing. And it was very nice. And we played together for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. We toured here in the US, in London. We performed in the biggest festivals in Brazil, like Lollapalooza Brazil. We did a lot of things.
What was that band called?
It was called Copacabana Club.
Okay.
Music is really hard to, you know, make money. You have to do other things unless you are, you know, mainstream, you get there. So I remember when I was almost 30, I was a bit upset. I don't see myself as a musician. Like I played the synth, I sang, but I was not a musician. So it was, okay, what can I do in my life? And then because I had the still photography in my background and I knew a lot of, you know, lighting and camera and all that stuff, my partner by then said, why don't you go to do, you know, cinematography? You're so good at it. I think you just need to learn how to move your camera. And then I searched for, you know, a few classes because I was almost 30. I thought if I go into university by now, like I will have like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
By the time I get to, you know, really get into the industry, I'm going to be like 36. So I did some like short classes. I went to London for a film with BBC senior who wrote a lot of books, and it was like a 10-day class in 16 mil. And then in a few months later I went to Barcelona to study as well. I did like 1 month and then I started like shooting. I came back to Brazil and did a music video and worked on a post-production company, like getting to know directors. And so it was, you know, was something that started, you know, small. I started doing a few things. And then when I saw I was doing big advertisings with like 200 people on set. But it was, for me, it feels it was a very natural process. Like now I've been doing films for 10 years. So it's a long time.
I love that story. Just you sort of being like, I need to do something. Yeah. I'm going to hustle and like learn it for myself.
This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard in music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. From indie artists on the rise to leading composers, MusicBed has curated the best roster of musicians for your films. Go to musicbed.com and use the promo code Camilla to get your first month free on a standard subscription. That's Camilla, C-A-M-I-L-A, at musicbed.com.
I wanted to mention the movement, though, what you talked about, because I think that is one of the more fascinating parts of your work. A huge fan of your work. The way that you move the camera is very specific to you. I'm very curious how you found that.
Yeah, I think there's two things about that. The first one is that I graduated in civil engineering.
Okay.
I was 16 and I got into university almost like from 16 to 17. And I finished engineering with 20 to 21. So I was very young. But I'm saying that because I feel that part of me, it's like very geek. I love gadgets. I love cameras. I love robots and numbers and things that move, you know. I love the challenge of learning a new tool. I think that for me is very exciting. And the second thing was that I remember I was DPing for my partner. It was an advertising, but like doc style. Mm-hmm. And we were traveling around Brazil. And I remember that we had to do a scene that I was just like walking with the subject while walking with the girl. And it was in Bahia. It's very hilly. Like I had to go up and down. And when he was in the edit room, he told me my camera movement sucked. It was really bad.
This is your partner saying this?
Yes. Like if you really want to like handheld, you better, you know, learn better because it's not good. And that was like heartbreaking in a sense, but at the same time was very good that someone close to you can be, you know, brutal, honest, and make you, you know, improve. So I remember I was, you know, okay, I need to do this better. And I was watching a lot of master classes and doing Pilates and finding my core. And, you know, and after that, I really think that I got in a place that I love doing handheld. Mm-hmm. I love doing it. And it takes time for you to understand, like, how the camera, because, you know, the cameras, they're heavy, they're big, they're square, they're not very fit for our body. So you have to find a way where your body can handle and you can bring the movement with you and with the character. So it was a long process to learn how to move my camera, but I love doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the gadgets that you find yourself using more times than not now?
It's funny because in advertising, I feel that once you use some tool and the market see yourself using that, and then you get a lot of projects that want you to use that same tool.
Yep.
So I think that like for last year, I used a lot of the boat robot camera that moves a lot. And I think I did like 5 or 6 projects that had it. So
when you are like concepting and like pitching to clients or agencies or something, like how do you describe movement in your treatments? Like how do you go about really depicting or making it visual for them?
I don't know. Like I feel that my treatments, the way I try to approach not only the movements, but the whole thing, I feel that I always need to find something that it's emotional to me in a sense. I know it's advertising and in the end we're selling things and products, but I think it's important for me as a drive to always find something that I really connect with.
I love that.
And I know that I bring a lot of myself for in the treatments. Like I'm very personal on my treatments. It's funny because every time I write a treatment, I write it in Portuguese because I feel that I'm more emotional when I can write in Portuguese, and then I translate it to English. So I always do that process because I feel that the words I choose in Portuguese, they are more, you know, personal, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, your English is great, by the way.
Thank you.
I don't think you have anything to worry about. One thing that's really interesting is, at least from the work that I've seen, like you do shoot all of your directorial stuff, right? Like,
yes.
Most, is it 100% of the time?
100%.
Like, maybe tell me why you do that.
It's funny because, well, I come from still.
Of course, yeah.
And then cinematography, and I started directing, now it's been almost like 5 years, And it's not that I don't trust another cinematographer, but I never worked with one.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And it's weird because I feel that when I think about a project, it starts with the image and it starts with the still image, like how the light is coming here and hitting your face. And then you have like, it's a very natural thing for me. And maybe, I don't know if it's a lack of communication that I can't really describe that, but I just know how to do it.
Right.
I know. Yeah. I feel it's so organic to me, but I'm in a growing, process in directing as well. Maybe at some point I will understand that I need someone else helping me.
I don't know if I agree with that. It's because it's really special. It's pretty rare to see it on that level, the level that you're doing it at. I wonder, do you like rely heavily on like your G&E department to like kind of execute some things, like so you can transition to being a director for moments?
Yes. I mean, in Brazil, I think I created a perfect team. And for example, my gaffer, he comes from sales, and I kind of brought him to the film set.
Yeah.
And then when I need to have a strobe for the stills and a continuous light for the film, he does both at the same time. And it's funny because like we look at each other and he knows what I need. Like,
yeah.
He knows. It's funny. He's moving to the US.
Amazing. Soon. Yeah.
So I think, because it takes time for you to build a team that you like, that you rely on. So for now, I have done films here that I didn't really need a big team, like that was more docu-style. So for now, I'm good. But I know that I need to, build that relationship with a good team here.
Yeah, for sure. Why do you think that you were drawn to the type of movement that you do in your commercials and stuff?
When I started editing, on the edit room, I was like, I lost the shot. I should have, did a transition or followed the character a little bit more. And I don't know, I feel that knowing what I need on the edit room, I'm always shooting a little bit more, or I know exactly where is the starting point and the ending point. But because everything is in my mind, I kind of know how to make that better. For example, if you have a very wide lens, you don't need to move that much the camera because it's so wide. It's always going to be moving already in that lens. So I don't know. Once you have that in your, DNA, it kind of helps you. Yeah.
A little more like technical, maybe like gear talk a little bit, but what lenses do you find yourself sort of using, going towards?
It's funny you say that because when I was a still photographer, I loved the 85. It was like my always the perfect lens for me. I loved it. And once I started filming, I remember the first feature I did with this friend of mine, director. I was always very concerned about the framing. Like, it has to be beautiful. It has to be perfect. And one thing that she taught me was like, you have to be careful about the beautiful frame because not always has to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to do kind of an ugly frame, not ugly, but you have to help the story. And if the character is suffering or is in a bad moment, you can do that beautifully, but you have to portray in a way that shows that this character is in pain. And that's when I started thinking about, going wider. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the last couple of years, I've been using a lot of wider lenses, like 25th, 35th. It's really hard to shoot in very wide lens is when you're doing passion projects or films with low budget, because when you
see too much,
you see too much. It's so hard to, you know, hide that thing that you don't want to see. So I think it comes as well with, you know, the budget, because like I shot this TV show for Disney last year, and we were looking to go with the wider lenses, but sometimes it was just impossible. Like our reference was The Favorite.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
The like 8mm sort of.
Yes.
And it's funny because you said earlier, you don't have to move the camera that much, because when Yorgos uses the 8mm, he just does this.
Yeah.
And the whole world.
There's a lot of things you have to hide. Yeah.
Other than sort of focal lengths and stuff, do you go towards like more vintage stuff? Do you go towards?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with my dad, basically in the laboratory.
In like a dark room.
Dark room. Yeah. Like we were developing, I was like 10 years old and I was helping him. The first projects I worked with him as an assistant, we were doing large format.
Like 8x10 or like?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And it was a very long process to do it, because it was like, okay, we frame, then we kind of take the picture, you develop, and then you see, oh, there's something missing. Yeah. And then you go back and then you do it again. And it takes like 3-4 days to do one image.
Yeah.
And I love this. I love like thinking about, you know, the frame and like when I'm doing stills, even if it's for a job, for an advertising, I don't photograph that much. I leave the set with, I don't know, like 100 pictures, 200.
Wow.
I love thinking about the image and shooting on film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, of course, because we do have to shoot a lot of things in digital, because of, you know, the time that we have. I'm always going back to your question. I always like to go to vintage lenses because we can break that sharpness a little bit. You know, I love being a little bit softer.
Do you have any sort of interesting stories from your time here in America so far? Anything super American happened to you yet?
Well, I went to shoot Dolly Parton.
In Nashville?
Yes.
No way?
Yes.
Like stills or
no, this was a crazy project that was released last week. And we did a musical for Taco Bell with Doja Cat and Dolly Parton. And we filmed all on iPhone.
No way.
Yes.
What a mashup.
It's like a 10-minute musical shot in New York.
Why were you shooting all on iPhone? That's interesting.
Well, because the musical was for TikTok, so they wanted to have an image that felt like it was done for TikTok users, that was natural to the platform. So that's why we, and the time that we had to edit and everything, like the whole package.
Yeah.
I think it was the best choice. And I feel very comfortable shooting with iPhone. I've been working with Apple for a couple of years now. And I do crazy edits on my phone, like crazy. Yeah.
What's your opinion on the move into more sort of vertical video, even with advertising? Like, have you noticed that sort of uptick in requests and stuff?
Yes. It's funny because I don't know, like we have our phones every time with us. Like it's the first thing we see and the last thing we see in the day. And we have it like with us all the time. And it's funny how lazy we are. Mm. Why we can't flip our phones? Why? We just can't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so weird.
Yeah.
Like we can spend an hour maybe sometimes like going from, you know, short video to short video to short video.
It's very engaging.
It's very engaging. But why we can't really watch a very like serious content on a vertical? I feel there's this, you know, it's hard to frame.
Mm-hmm.
Like okay, we have our body is vertical, but once you have like two bodies or mm-hmm. three bodies, it's hard to fit in a vertical yeah. screen. So I think we have a challenge that will last for a couple of years. Maybe at some point our cell phones will become something else. Glasses maybe, and then we have to rethink it.
Do you think about the sort of future of when VR and sort of AR become, have the capacity for us to like tell stories inside of them pretty easily? Like, what do you think about?
I don't know. I feel we have a few to experiment a lot. And I love the idea of trying new things. For example, last year I was able to try the Unreal Engine in a project. And
like the LED walls?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was very nice. But the thing is, the one I used in Brazil, we didn't have that many receivers.
Okay.
Because you need like one thing in the camera that sends the signal to the other receivers. And then when you move the camera, the background moves with it.
Yeah.
I know that here, well, it's Hollywood. They have everything. So I really want to try here.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of time for you to build the images that you need on the background. So it's only for projects that have time.
Yeah.
You can't really do, if you have to deliver a film next month, it won't be possible. So I think we need also to bring creatives, agencies to learn the system and understand like what we can do, because then they can plan ahead and okay, this project can be done that way and we can use that as a tool.
Yeah. I loved seeing how they utilized it and how Greg Fraser utilized it for Batman.
Yes, I always try to watch things in a perspective of a person that doesn't know anything about that, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Batman, but for me, it looks like a perfume commercial. It's so perfect.
So slick, yeah.
Yeah, like all the images are gorgeous. And then you're, okay, this is just too good. And it's weird. Like one thing that I love going to a very raw, natural light to shoot. But at the same time, I love being on the stage when I can like control every aspect of the shooting. It's a very strong contradiction for me.
Your work has a lot of, it utilizes color in a very interesting way. Is that something that you think about early on in a project? Is that something that you make specific in a treatment? Like, how do you think about color?
I love to see the colors as they are. Mm-hmm. I think that when I started with film, like even being a cinematographer, I remember in Brazil, there was this trend that like all the films were very like washed, like no contrast. It was almost like the raw file that they got from Ari. And I was very annoyed by that. Like, why black is not black? Why green is not green? Why? I couldn't understand. So for me, it's very important. I feel that I'm always very picky on choosing colors, especially shooting on film. Like reds usually.
Colors are always.
Are very like red, Kodak red. It's always like very deep, saturated and strong, like the reds, the greens and the blues, they are very present.
Yeah, like a Portra 400 can never be, like I've never seen anything as good as just a still or a medium format shot of like a Portra 400 or something.
Yeah.
Obviously it's a little warm, but I imagine your like wardrobe department is like very specific. And do you travel with a specific sort of wardrobe or do you still have to find people?
No. Yeah. It's funny because when we're working with advertising, like wardrobe is the only department that everyone thinks they can say something about it.
Yeah.
Like, you wear clothes, so you can say something about the other person's clothes. And it's very personal.
Yeah. It's almost like they... If they got to just dress the characters, it would look very similar to them.
Yeah. So I usually try to work with stylists that can understand that you know, wardrobe is the only department. Because like if I choose a 50 mil or a 65, the client won't say, I don't like that lens.
Yeah.
Or if I choose a very new lens or a very old lens, they might say, I would like that to be a little bit more sharp. But, you know.
You're right. They would never say anything.
But if your color is, if your t-shirt is blue and I hate blue.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, that wardrobe, you know, that t-shirt is not good. Can you bring me a yellow shirt?
Yeah.
So wardrobe, it's always a subject in advertising. I feel that here, the clients I got to work with were, they were super nice and I didn't have, you know, this thing with them. But I remember working in Brazil was always something.
Yeah. Do you think that the agencies and clients and brands that you work with see the cinematography side of you as like almost like an added benefit to have someone who does both?
Funny you say that, because in Brazil, like it was very hard for me to pop the bubble of cinematographers. Mm-hmm. Like there, it was always like the agency wanted to work with that DP and that. Like, it didn't matter who the director was, but they wanted that DP. Mm. So for me, it was hard to, you know.
It's interesting. Really? So it's almost like the visual nature of it was more important.
Yeah, almost. A lot of times, yes.
Interesting.
But here, I feel that people are not used to have a director DP. So every time I get a project, everyone asks, like, who is going to DP for you? And I say, me?
Yeah.
And then people, no, you can't do both, because while you have to talk with clients, you have to be doing light. And I always say, well, if they hire me because of my work, I have to DP myself, because I don't know how to translate my vision to another DP. So I have to do it.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, to give me the team and all the things I need to make it work, because this is how I do. So it's been, I know it's different, but so far, so good.
Is it that they just don't look close enough to see who shot it as well? Like, because it feels, you have so much work that you've directed and DP'd that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It would feel like to me, if I was on the agency side or whatever, it'd be like, it wouldn't be as much of a shock, because you've proven yourself so many times. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's got to be frustrating a little bit.
Yeah, it is a bit. But I think that it's something, to fight about. Like, well, if they want me to have another DP, then I shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
It's not that I want to be like, okay, so it's this or that, but I can promise I'll deliver the same thing if I'm working with a person that I never worked with.
What was like the main reason, other than, you know, stepped and working in America, that you made the jump to
the U.S.?
To the U.S., yeah.
I don't know. I grew up in this small city. And I remember growing up with my mom, we both couldn't sleep at night and we joined together to watch movies and up until late. And I remember like the first film I watched that I loved was Birds.
The Birds, like Alfred Hitchcock.
Hitchcock. I loved it so much. And I remember the impact that had in my life. Because like just after we watched, we went to the beach. And when I got to the beach, there were a lot of seagulls and birds. And it was, oh my God, I can't leave the car.
Yeah.
But it's funny because like until I started really doing cinematography, I never thought I could do that.
Yeah.
Because like we didn't have a film school in my city. My dad was a photographer, but I never thought I could operate a camera. Like it was never on my radar. Like never, ever. And the first time my partner asked me, like, why don't you DP? I was like, wow, I can do that. I could do that. And it started to encourage me to, you know, really start doing that. And it's funny because until I was, I don't know, like 20 something, I never thought that the US was the place for me. I always had in my mind that I wanted to live in Europe, But I don't know, as I started to grow older and started to work in the film industry, it made sense to come here. I started working narrative as well, and I feel like, well, this is the place.
Yeah.
So it didn't make sense for me to come here before I really got a career. So now I'm going to be 40 this year, and this is the first time I could, you know, have that experience. So it takes time.
Yeah.
And I feel that right now it's, you know, it's the best time that I could do that. I don't know if I was younger that, I don't know if it could have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, it's good. Totally I feel that I have the maturity to be here right now, because it, LA can be really challenging as well. There's so many, you know, good people in this industry. It's very competitive, and everyone is an artist. Like, everyone is a DP, a writer, an actor. So if you're not confident enough, you can get here and just, you know, get lost.
Yeah.
So I feel that I'm right now in a place in my career, in a moment, that I just know, okay, this is what I can deliver, and this is where I can make a difference, and it's fine. Yeah.
Do you have something, I guess, like truth or like quote or something that you try to approach every project with?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that it's in my head all the time, but I feel I only do projects when I'm ready to do them. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that my journey tells this in a very strong sense. I started as a photographer. Slowly, I started to do cinematography. Slowly, I started to direct. And I feel I can, I give each step the time that it needs for me to learn what I can, like, what is the next step. I feel that I'm ready to direct something narrative. I'm working on a script. Like, I'm not a writer. I know that. So I have to work with someone else to write something for me.
Sure.
But I feel with all the experience I gathered, I could do a narrative right now. Mm-hmm. Like, I know I can. So this is, it's more like a question that I do every time.
Yeah. And not rushing things, like being patient is probably a
like
big thing.
I feel that getting here and getting to know people, and people get to know me because it takes time. I remember being in São Paulo. When I got there, I wanted to stay 3 years, and I ended up staying 10 because it takes time for like the community, you know, the environment to get to know you, to understand that you're there, you live there, you do your things, and so I know it will take, I expect that it doesn't take that much time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice to land here and have all these new people getting to know me and know my work. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Maybe the last thing I want to see if there's like one good story that you have from your band days. Just like, what's like the craziest story that you have from that time?
Oh my God. We had a few. I met Spike Jonze in one of our concerts. We were performing in this big festival in Brazil. It's called Planeta Terra. Mm-hmm. And I think that year Iggy Pop was playing. Like, it was a very good, you know, lineup. Yeah. It was the first big festival that we were performing. Like, we were a very small band in, like, playing in small gigs, and then suddenly we have this big stage, and it was like an amusement park. We were playing in front of the roller coaster. And my partner was doing, you know, a backstage making off for us, like videos, and then Spike Jonze passed by, and it was, oh my God, like, that was so amazing. That was kind of a spark for me to you know, to start thinking about engaging in the film industry.
Beautiful. Camila, thank you so much.
Thank you, Christian.
This was really fun.
Yeah, it was really nice. I'm very glad that we did it.
Awesome.
Good.
This cut. Next time on the Music Bed Podcast, we talk with writer-director Lloyd Lee Choi.
You know, I got the call for Ken, I was like, this is a scam. Like, from this random number, like this +33 number. I'm like, oh, it's just another scam call. Or it's a robocall. I kept declining it probably like 4 or 5 times over 3 days. He emailed saying, hey, why aren't you answering your phone call? I want to talk to you. And then I called him back, and he said, oh, we'd love to accept you into the program. I'm like, oh, wow, incredible. But then in the back of my head, I'm like, this is still a scam. Like, this is a really elaborate scam to get my social security number.
Right. This podcast is a production of MusicBed, the standard of music licensing for film, TV, and advertising. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with another filmmaker you know, and subscribe to be notified for the next episodes.